Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome everyone to Brainstorm Brewery. This is our first episode here on Gathering Magic. We're really excited to be here. We'd like to thank you if this is your first time listening, and everyone else, thank you for staying along. This is a financial podcast and a brewing podcast, even though financials is what we do most. There's four hosts here. It's me, I'm Marcel MTG. We also have Ryan Bouchard.
Hey, what's up? I'm the Gathering Magic writer for the financial side, and if you haven't read my articles by now, well, hopefully you enjoy the podcast more.
We also have Corbin Hostler.
Yeah, hey guys. I am a writer at a couple different websites, including Quiet Speculation, and I'm excited, you know, for us to bring the podcast to you and hopefully get everyone more knowledgeable in the ways of magic finance.
And Jason E. Alt.
Hey, everybody. This is Jason. I'm Gathering Magic's Who to Follow writer, and I also write for QuietSpeculation.com.
And I'm Marcel again, Marcel MTG. I was on Monday Night Magic for quite some time and then started Brainstorm Brewery with everyone else. I don't do any writing, only play on Modo, so that's what I do. But the other hosts here, they're all resident traders. I do a little bit of trading. I mostly trade to keep my collection going so I can stay current and standard. So I pay attention to financials, but they're definitely hardcore traders. So definitely Ryan, so talk about how you got started in trading and how long you've been doing this.
I've been trading magic cards for years and years, ever since I pretty much started playing, but it really turned into, I don't know if I want to call it a career, but you know what I'm utilizing as income, a couple of years ago when I was just looking for a job and realized that this is something I can make money at, and I had already been using it to sustain my collection and make a little bit to go to weekends and, you know, more or less have it pay for the event. But ever since then, I've really dove into the Magic community, hardcore for financials, and I've pretty much quit playing and quit grinding. And, yep, that's where I'm at right now.
What about you, Jason? How'd you get started into Magic Magic Finance?
Ryan and I are friends, and we used to go to the events together. And I always noticed that Ryan would sleep in when we had to get up early to go play in the events, and he always seemed to have money at the end of the weekend, and I was always broke, after spending all my money playing and then, you know, having to go out of pocket for the hotel and food and everything. And I just kind of got a lot more interested in the finance side. And really, I was grinding a lot and it wasn't really getting me anywhere. And there's no variance when you're trading. It's one of those games when you're trading where the best and knowledgeable person is going to win. And, no one ever lost a trade to a lucky top deck or anything like that. So I started thinking about the time I spent preparing for doing the financial side was time better spent, I thought. And ever since I stopped grinding and started doing more financial stuff, I've been a lot happier. So I say this a lot, but I think almost my least favorite aspect of this game is actually sitting down and playing it competitively. So I've made the transition and I've never been happier.
So Corbin, when did you get the bug to get into this financial game?
Well, I started playing in Shadowmoor, and I mean, like everyone else, I started, you know, playing the game. And I remember at the time losing horribly to Baneslayer Angel, which at the time was $50. And it basically made me cry because I was a broke college student who couldn't afford to play with Angels. And, you know, I couldn't beat him because the card was extremely good at the time. So trading for me started out as a way, you know, a couple blogs started packing up. The Pack to Power got going that John Medina was doing. And just kind of showed me, hey, this is something I can use to extend my collection so I can actually play these expensive decks. And over time, you know, like Jason said, he just realized that the time is better spent just working in the financial area of the game than it is in playing. You know, I still love to play for fun, but if I go to a Grand Prix or something now, I don't play. I have a much better time just trading, hanging out.
Yeah, see, I'm the complete opposite of these guys. I went to Gen Con with them. I had a trade binder, and I kind of found it miserable. It's just like, you know, it's something that you really got to be on, and like they say, like you spend more time doing the trading and you really want to be trading than playing. And I would rather say my passion is more towards playing. And that's a lot with, like, say, my Moto account and a lot of the trades that I do. And, you know, I like to play. So I'm definitely trying to get more competitive and more definitely get my chops up. I just got a lot of work. But so you guys say that you don't play no more. So, what do you play in Magic? You don't play competitively. Do you play EDH? Or how do you stay interested in the game instead of just doing it financially?
I go to the shop almost every night of the week. We have a sealed league. We do cube draft. We do pickup draft. We do FNM. So there's all kind of competitive stuff on the shop level that I like to do to just, you know, keep in touch with the community, you know, on the local level. But maybe I'll go play a grinder before a GP too, you know, if it's limited. But I don't, other than FNM, I don't really play constructed much anymore, but I do play a ton of limited because you don't have to keep up a collection for that. And, you know, sometimes you end up getting opening decent and you can just draft money and end up making your value that way. So definitely a lot of limited, I would say.
Yeah, I'm kind of in a different boat than Ryan and Jason in that this is not my full-time job. It's something I do on the side. During the day, I guess you would say I'm a sports writer here in Oklahoma. I cover OU sports and high school sports as well. And what that means is it means I work a lot of nights and weekends, which make Magic trips difficult and makes FNM kind of a rare occurrence for me. So really getting to play Magic at all is kind of a treat for me, and I like to play limited when I'm able to and make it out to pre-releases and then make it to big events when I can. But I'm certainly not as involved in the day-to-day drafting or playing constructed, you know, all of that stuff as I'd like to be, just, you know. But doing it on the side works. If you are able to devote the time outside of being at the card shop to the research end of it, it still works for you.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't play as much Magic anymore as I used to. Pretty much like Jason, I stick to limited. I do like Legacy. If someone hands me a standard deck and, like, there's a small store tournament going on, I'll play. But at most major events, like, I always consider it, like this past weekend or 2 weekends ago, I was considering playing Sunday on Legacy, but I ended up just dumping the idea to go trade because trades were okay. So, I mean, like, I've definitely toyed around with the idea. Like, I played in States this past year, and I did all right in that, but I don't know. Like, I've just kind of lost the fire that I used to have when I was grinding.
What you just heard there, ladies and gentlemen, was Ryan referring to a top 8 finish at States as doing all right, just so everyone's clear.
A top 8 finish with what?
That would be his Seance Brew.
That's true. That is, in fact, what I top 8ed with.
Yeah, if people will listen to the cast or go back to episodes before, Ryan has been hanging on to Seance since the start of this podcast. And
we have another 6 months of legality. It can happen.
I still think this card is amazing, and I don't know why people aren't playing it.
Are you going to be playing it with Bobo?
I've got a new brew. I've got my roommate on this. It doesn't play Bobo. It should, though. But it does play Guild Feud and Seance.
Oh, man.
And the deck is not as bad as you think it is. It's actually been – I've been tearing it up in Moto.
Why would we think it was bad, Ryan? Is it because you used the phrase Guild Feud?
Or is it because Ryan pitched it in the first place?
Hey, you know what? Try the deck out before you knock it. I'll send you a list. The deck's actually very good. Marcel, you should try this deck. You would enjoy it. It's like playing Sneak Attack. It feels like playing Legacy Sneak Attack.
So how do you get – you ramp up to the 6 to drop the
– Yeah, you're running – I mean, it's similar to the way that you were playing Seance where you're, like, you're running – except this way you're running Faithless Looting and – is a charm, and you're able to, like, just drop ways to gain life, Thragtusk and stuff still, and then you're running, like, Grizzlebrand and Zagana. I've got a couple other creatures in there. Like, I'm toying around, like, what should be the ideal top end, but, like, enough creatures.
It sounds like it is all of the colors.
It is. 5 colors is so easy in this format.
Yeah, you could play all the colors, and that's all you can do, and I can't wait to gatecrack. I mean, Dragon's Maze, because it looks like Dragon's Maze is going to force all you can play, all the colors.
Yeah, I mean, this is a 5-color format. If we're playing 4-color mid-range aggro decks, you can play a 5-color control deck.
Yeah. True story.
I mean, like, I started thinking about that. I was like, man, what color should I cut here? And then I started realizing why. I mean, you have Farseek, you have so many ways to gain all this mana and stuff. Like, there's just no reason. I'm running Sylvan Primordial in the deck, too. Because yeah, that guy goes and gets you a forest. It doesn't have to be a basic forest.
Yeah. I'm going to make Master Biomancer and Lingering Soul is a big thing. Because those cards are just made for each other. So 4 colors is definitely reasonable. Especially with Farseek. Like, Farseek just makes everything possible.
Yeah. And I mean, seancing back, like, a Primordial, nuking their Planeswalker and going and getting a forest is not too bad of a turn. Same thing with Guild Feud. I mean, there's a lot of creatures right now that are very good when it comes into play. Abilities that are huge, like game-turning abilities.
Yeah. So, I mean, here you guys see the, I guess, the brewing aspect of the podcast, which we get into pretty regularly. The other side of it is the financial stuff. And, you know, as everyone knows, card prices, especially these days, are crazy with cards spiking out of nowhere. The sets with the redemption changes. That was our episode last week talking about how redemption will affect the price of cards. So, you know, that's kind of what we aim to do every week, is keep you guys up to date on what's going on and what you can expect from the, you know, the next week or two in Magic Finance, and everything you can do to make your collection go the as far as possible so that you are keeping money in your pocket rather than having to put it out for cards. So that's kind of what we hope to do for everybody.
Yep. And at the beginning of each of our shows, we do a financial segment called Picks of the Week. Do we want to start with that this time, guys?
Sure.
You want to explain what it does? How Picks of the Week works?
Yeah, every week, usually take one card a piece. Sometimes you might have a couple if you got back from a big trade weekend. And you just talk about cards that you think are going to go up, or maybe they're a good time to sell, or maybe you think you should hold on to it for a little while. It doesn't have to be anything particular, but just a card that you think you should be keeping your eye on one way or the other. And each member of the cast picks one, whether it be in online, a lot of times for Marcel, or in real life for the rest of us.
Yeah, so my pick of the week for this week is to get the Scars of Mirrodin dual lands. Especially on Modo, they're like $1.50, 40 cents for these lands. This is about as low as you can possibly get. They're about $3 to $5, $5 for the Synchrome Coast and paper. So even then, it's still good because these cards are not going to be reprinted within Modern Masters. So this is not going to be a reprint likely, and these are going to be played in Modern because aggro decks especially are going to be needing these lands. So get them right now while they're cheap. You know, stock up on them, sit on them, wait for a while. This is going to be a long-term pickup, but at this price, you really can't lose. You got some money that you can play with.
I agree with that. I remember right after rotation on these, I picked up a ton of Blackleaf Cliffs because they were going for $2 at the time. And obviously those are a huge player in Modern, and they went back up to 4 or 5. I think it's a really good call by Marcel because these are still, you know, they've started to come up a little bit as the Modern season's gone on. Now that we're towards the end of Modern season, they'll start to come back down, and they're going to be really good pickups.
Yeah, because a lot of people is going to want to out them out, so you can definitely get them for a good price or for some decent trades and whatnot.
Good call. I'm actually going to Audible. I told everybody I was going to do a different card that I'm doing right now, but in us talking before the cast started, I think I should point out that Abrupt Decay is a card that I think is creeping back up, and I think you should pick them up while people still think they're a little bit cheaper than they are. I think the lowest I saw Abrupt Decay was something like $4 or $5 on Cool Stuff Inc., if I'm not mistaken. Well, I'm saying that was their low point. But if you look at Abrupt Decay on Cool Stuff right now, they're up at 8. So they're creeping back up. I think when Redemption hit, they were really low. But Abrupt Decay is a great way to deal with Boros Reckoner, which is a problem card right now. It's an amazing card in Legacy. Abrupt Decay has really taken counterbalance decks completely off the table. It's a great removal spell because it deals with almost everything annoying in Legacy. So anything that's Legacy playable and still has applications in Standard shouldn't be below $8, and you can still get them a little bit cheaper in trade for if you catch people snoozing. So this is absolutely a card I would try to pick up in trade, and this is a card that's gone up about $3 in Cool Stuff in the past month or so.
I completely agree. On Modo, actually, not too long ago, they were about $1. They were selling for a little bit less than $1. Now they're $3 in Return of Ravnica, which is one of the sets that most of the rares are not there. I mean, Death Rite is now about $6, but everything else is below this. So Abrupt Decay is a card that's climbing, so that's definitely an indicator with so much, you know, Return of Ravnica out there, that the fact that it's climbing in price does show that there's going to be a trend.
Yeah, now that people are moving on to Draft Gatecrash, there's not going to be near as many Ravnica packs opened as there were, you know, a month ago.
Yep, especially.
Yeah, and I'll move on here to my pick. It's Greater Good. It's if you don't know, Greater Good is a really popular EDH card. And it's one that, over the last week or so, has really started to rise in price. And right now it's $7 on Cool Stuff, and that's something I see being, you know, if it continues in the direction it's going, it'll be at least $10 here in a month or two. You know, this is one of those cards that as it kind of starts to pick up some steam, a lot of people want to play in EDH. It goes into, you know, basically every EDH green deck. And this is one of those cards that with the last printing being in 9th edition, is pretty far removed from being out there on the market. So it's the kind of thing that is just going to, over time, become more and more rare.
That's fair. My pick for this week is Jace Architect of Thought. I think that this guy is criminally underpriced, mainly for the reason that he costs 4 mana, and his name is Jace. You can currently get him for $12, which is insane for any super playable Planeswalker. I mean, the guy's still in the Pro Tour list. He was still cropping up in a lot of the lists that they were showing online. He may not be as big of a player as he was at first, but I think he's still something that easily $20, if not $25. And, I mean, with a good spike, which will happen over the next year and a half, he's going to rise up to $25, $30 at some point because he's going to see the right amount of play in the right deck.
Definitely.
And $12 is just way too low for him.
Now, I have a question, Ryan. Do you think any sort of long-term price rise has to be tied to playability outside of Standard?
I think so, but he has also seen play outside of Standard, so I've seen him in some modern decks cropping up and stuff. I don't know if I've seen him in Legacy yet, but I certainly can see him filling the role where you would like the other Jace in modern, just because you can't have the other Jace. He does still draw you the cards. He can still protect you against some of the token strategies that are out there. Granted, obviously nowhere near as good, but he's still a very playable card.
Yeah, and I like it for Standard. Once the Thundermaw Hellkites rotate out, once Hellrider's gone, you know, tapping out on turn 4 for a Planeswalker looks a lot more attractive, especially when it's one with a semi-decent defensive ability like the new Jace has. You know, right now the metagame's kind of hostile to him, and that's why he's $12. But like Ryan said, there's a year and a half, so much can happen. This is the kind of card that after rotation, when it's a year out of print, can go from being $12 to 25, 30, maybe even higher on a weekend if it's, you know, part of the tier 1 deck after rotation. So I think they're probably not going to get much cheaper than they are right now.
Well, if you're worried about haste creatures, wouldn't you advocate mitigating a little bit of that problem by pairing Jace with Blind Obedience in the current standard format?
Yeah.
Or is there another reason not to play Jace? Or as much, I guess.
I mean, I think that's absolutely a good idea. You know, I'm not maybe the expert on standard as far as what you should and shouldn't be doing. I know that Jace is not seeing a ton of play right now because of those what I assume, all the haste creatures in the aggro decks. There's just a lot of ways to deal with them right now. Yeah, so you guys want to move on, talk about the latest big news, and that was record-setting attendance at GP Charlotte, 2,692 players.
What's craziest about this to me was this was on the exact same day as another GP, also in North America, this one in Quebec City, that actually had attendance. I think they were above 800.
I believe so. Yeah,
that's 800. That was almost 4,000 people playing GP Magic in North America. That's insane to me. If there hadn't been another GP, I think the numbers from Charlotte would have been, jaw dropping. But the fact that there were, you know, almost 1,000 people playing pretty close is, you know, on the same continent. It's pretty nuts to me.
Yeah, it's awesome. So the other impact of Grand Prix Charlotte, which for those of you who haven't listened to the cast before, is very important to Ryan and I, is we're all planning on being at GP Vegas in June, where they're having the Modern Masters event.
GP?
Ryan and I placed a bet on that event that it will be the highest attended Grand Prix ever.
Hands down, not even close.
That's Ryan's side. I took the under on it.
I offered you a buffer.
We bet FOGO on the outcome.
However, I think that bet needs to be upped. There is, if people are going to show up to Charlotte for I don't want to say a shitty sealed, but compared to Modern Masters, I'm pretty sure everything's going to be a shitty sealed. If they're going to show up to Charlotte, which is where flights aren't that cheap, there's a 0% chance that they're not showing up to Vegas where you can get cheap flights into. Hotel is not that hard to find, and it's cheap to stay there.
I mean, you're missing a lot in that people on the East Coast can drive to Charlotte. Nobody's driving to Vegas unless maybe you live in Southern California. You have to fly there. Charlotte in general is a less expensive city than Vegas. You know, there's a lot of things, and I'm not interested.
Vegas is super cheap, actually.
I mean, it can be. It just depends on what you do. You know, I'm interested in keeping the bet as it is, because for those of you who don't know, Ryan and I also had a FOGO bet on whether or not Jace, the Mind Sculptor, would be unbanned in Modern, and Ryan was on the losing end of that one. So I'm either going to have two FOGO dinners or it's going to be a break even here.
That's why we need more, because I'm either going to dig myself way down there or I'm going to put you in the grave. Because, no, the FOGO bet can stay, but we need to add something else on. You're getting really cocky about this. There's no way you can win this.
This is a really good game. This is everyone's talking. This is the question on Twitter, so, you know, it's worth it. I honestly think it's going to be Ryan has it in the bag.
I think so. I don't know. You're forgetting
the one. Okay, here's the bet. Part. If you guys want to up the bet, how about you buy Fogo for the four of us as the loser, not just for that's, the other person that bet with you?
I'm not changing the bet. I'm not.
If everyone's then I will put an open invite out to anyone on Twitter who wants to send me a new bet and they think they'll take the under. I will almost snap take any bet. Almost.
I haven't bet, but I will say that I actually like the over on this because I think GP Vegas will be all the fun. And I think that everything Ryan said was accurate. Despite agreeing with Corbin that Charlotte is much more drivable, a flight to Vegas is approximately 75 cents because they are primarily a tourist destination and they want to make it affordable for people to get there. They want hotel accommodation to be cheap and plentiful. I think this is going to be a very easy GP to get to if you want to be there. And why wouldn't you want to play Modern Masters Sealed?
Yeah, and you're also forgetting the main thing, Corbin. You're talking about how you had some main point. My main point is Magic players are degenerates and they will go wherever there is gambling. And Vegas is – there is no better place to have a Grand Prix than Vegas in North America.
It's fun regardless of who wins the bet. I agree. You know, but speaking of, you know, huge events like that, not all of the news out of Charlotte was good because a lot of people were worried about, you know, there being so many people and some of the pros talking about it's not worth it to drive to make the travel to GPs and stuff like this. You know, with that many people, it's very difficult to run a tournament. And they kind of had to change around the rules for day two and how many rounds they have to play just to accommodate that many people. So, I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on this? As Magic continues to grow, things like this are likely to become more and more common.
Yeah, they're going to have to deal with it because, I mean, this is going to probably become a common occurrence, especially, say, on the East Coast where you're going to have these big events. And they're going to have to figure out a way to scale, I guess, either the prize structure or being able to handle the crowd and the tournament structure so that everything works out correctly. Because if Magic is going to continue to grow and they keep making a great game, this is the future of Magic.
I think the biggest problem they had was day two, they played a series of single elimination rounds before the draft even started. That upset a lot of people to the extent that there are a lot of pros taking to Twitter saying maybe X1-1 needs to be the cutoff. But I think that X1-1 is absolutely draconian. It's granted, you know, there will be enough X1-1s to have a full field on day two if you've got, you know, 2,700 people playing the event. But I think that's going to discourage a lot of people if they have to play the tightest Magic of their life just to make day two. I think that's going to be upsetting for a lot of people. X2 is hard enough. So I think maybe those single elimination rounds, while those are unpleasant, I think that's preferable to making the cutoff a little tougher.
Yeah, I think I think there are a couple of things that frankly just confuse me in that, you know, attendance, you know, doubled, tripled in the past 2 years at these events. How is the prize pool staying the exact same?
It's gone up slightly, but I definitely agree with you on that. That was exactly what I was going to say. It's like there's no reason that there isn't a scaling prize pool for GPs.
Yeah. Players are paying more money than ever to play in these events. Like, I understand that there's cost for the tournament coordinators and all of this stuff, but if they're able to do this 2 years ago with a third of the attendance, surely they can do it now with three times that.
Right. And with Star City being the TO behind all this and doing everything, they made over $100,000. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers and everything, but they, like, if you look at just how much money they took in, they made over $100,000.
Not counting sales.
Yeah, not counting sales, not counting side events. That's just for the main event.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's part of it. Like, and that kind of alleviates the problem with the pro saying it's not worth it, and that, you know, all these additional rounds are rough and all of that, you know, but the EV just shrinks and shrinks. If you at least up the prize pool, you know, that helps in that regard. Now, maybe you expand it farther. Maybe you go to a top 16.
I don't think you need to do that. I think you just need to make it so that if you're going to make it so your day two is so grueling, make it so everybody who's playing in day two makes money. That's the thing. Like right now, it's only top 64, right?
Are 1,800 people or 2,800, it's top 64. And not only that, whether there are 400 people or 2,800, it's still cut to top 8. If you cut to top 16, you would play one additional round.
Yeah.
After the cut. Like that's... Yep. That's not that much.
I mean, you wouldn't have at least people getting bubbled out.
right? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, some people are getting bubbled, but, like, you don't have – I mean, there's always going to be a bubble, but, you know, people who are playing – who are going, like, 14-2 or whatever maybe aren't getting bubbled.
Right. The deserving – like, I think if you go – if you make day two at all, you should have a chance at top eight. And when you can make day two and you know you're out of top eight – or maybe you don't know right away, but say you win out day two and you still don't make top eight because your breakers were so bad. Right. I don't think that's acceptable. If you're allowed into day two, you should have a chance at top eight, plain and simple.
That's a good thing, too. Yep. I mean, there's – absolutely. Change. I mean, this is a difficult problem for Wizards because, you know, frankly, it's new. This is something they've never had to deal with. These structures were not put in place to handle 2,700 people. So it's something that they'll have to learn and adjust to, and I expect that to happen.
Something that I heard was a good suggestion was to break up people into like 256 player pods, and then you get the top players from there going into day twos. And then that way you got prize structure that can scale along with the tournament structure that can scale with it, and that'll create a less of a headache.
These are all good suggestions. I think Wizards is on it. They know that something's got to change. Really, the problem everyone had with what happened in Charlotte was Wizards didn't have a month to sit down and discuss all the different stuff. We've had a week to armchair quarterback this. They had to snap make a decision on the fly. Nobody liked the single elim rounds, but I think it was probably better than anything anybody would have come up with on the spot. So I applaud them for rolling with it, and I think they know that something needs to change. But since Magic is such a juggernaut culturally, like these events are so big, and I don't expect Charlotte to be a fluke. I expect it to be the beginning of a new trend of 2,500 plus player GPs. They know. And they're going to make the adjustments.
They got to get it together by Vegas. We better have something
Vegas
right.
Vegas is going to break the bar.
So, you know, I don't want to be playing Modern Masters and be miserable there. And be like, you know, let's just go home and booze cube. So, you know, even though that might happen.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll happen anyway. But, yeah, we'd like to enjoy ourselves while they're at the convention. But I'm sure that they've already prepared for this. I mean, they have all the judging staff. Everybody is talking about it. So I don't even know why you're taking this bet, Corbin. Everybody is saying that they think it's going to be huge. I mean, there's people calling it over 4,000. I've seen reputable judges and stuff expecting there to be 3,500 players.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm fine with being proven wrong on this. It's win-win.
Yeah, I mean, to go to FOGO either way.
Yeah, but, I mean, the bad part is if we play in this, because I will be playing, no matter what I'm playing this
format,
we're going to run into that exact problem if they haven't fixed the GP structure by then. We might be playing in a 4,000 Grand Prix, or 4,000-person Grand Prix, where 64 people get paid out, and even first place. Like, can you imagine how long that is going to feel like if you're playing as 4,000 people and first place still only gets $3,500?
Yeah, talk about player spike. And speaking of spikes, what about these card spikes that's been happening? That people have been going running around like chickens with their heads cut off.
It's been crazy. I mean, just looking at the last week, we've had Hall of the Bandit Lord, things like Marinar, the Rat Lord from Kamigawa, Thrun, I think it's quadrupled in price in the last week.
Shallowgrave went from $3 to $20 on eBay. I think that was the biggest percentage spike we've seen. That was 700%.
Yeah, I mean, there was a ton of them. I mean, just all sorts of things that weren't necessarily bulk before, but, like, you know, Hall of the Bandit Lord's always been a pick. It's better than bulk rare, but not by much. And then all of a sudden, for it to be $10, I mean, there's just so many things. I'm having to go back through boxes and see if I have any copies every time one of these cards goes up.
Right. So, I mean, let's...
Now, the mere fact that we're talking about going through boxes, I think, says to everybody, Jason, Ryan, Corbin, and Marcel are not buying Hall of the Bandit Lord. We're not buying Shallow Graves. We're not buying Thruns. Yeah, we're seeing if we have any so we can sell into this sudden spike. But I think it's not wise to invest in things that they seem like artificial spikes. I think everybody, their gut feel was initially on all these cards that, is there anything to justify this? A while ago, somebody bought a bunch of Cosmic Larva. I don't know if they were trying to make that go up, if they were collecting it, but for whatever reason, there was a run on Cosmic Larva, and everybody went, oh no, speculation. But everybody looked at it and said, you know, I don't need any Cosmic Larva. There's no deck this goes in. I can't think of a reason why this is high, and everybody left it alone. I don't see a reason not to do that this time. If you really are desperate to play with Thrun in the next week, I guess you have to pick them up at that price, but I would just wait. If you really want to play with Thrun... just wait a few weeks. And I think if it's not a real price, it won't maintain.
Yeah, and on the flip side of this, I think you can take the information from these card spikes and moving forward realize that, like, a lot of these cards we're talking about in this, especially our picks of the week, like, I think one of us had talked about Birthing Pod last week or something like that, and that's one of those cards that, like, it's played a significant amount in Modern, considering it's four of, you know, in its own namesake deck, but why isn't that card more expensive? And, I mean, just you start evaluating the format and realizing there's a lot of cards that, you know, if Thrun is going up and it's played as a one or two of, then there's a lot of these cards that are four ofs in staple decks that are still low. Like, are they going to spike in 2 weeks? Or are they just never going to spike? But, I mean, we're seeing the weirdest card spike right now. It's very, very strange to me because I don't know what to pick up.
That's a really good way to look at it, Ryan. Should Amulet of Vigor be more than Birthing Pod? No, it should not. So if it is, that doesn't seem like that is based on demand. That seemed like that is based on an artificial demand.
Who is this that's causing this artificial demand? Is this speculators? Is this people that are just blindly throwing money into a random card? A Lauren type of insider information or what?
That's fueling a few of them. Something else I've seen is the metrics that people use to track prices. There are some accidental, I don't want to say exploits, but there are some glitches that can be caused. Like, say an app averages the prices of these cards across different websites. Now, say one of these websites sells out of the non-foil copies. What it might do is replace it with the foil copy. I've seen this before, and average that. And what that'll do is throw the average price way up when really all that what happened was a few copies sold out on one website at the regular price, but all of a sudden it's averaging the foil price. The price shoots way up and everyone goes, oh no, they buy it out and it causes an artificial run on the card. And, you know, it's completely panic fueled and it doesn't really go anywhere.
And one of the other problems is that on some of these older cards that have just a few copies, you know, on something like TCG Player, if somebody buys out one store of a copy, it can massively change the price, which creates these fluctuations. And then people get in the herd mentality and they buy them all up, like Jason was saying. And that's kind of how we get these random cards spiking. You know, or on the flip side, it could just be that somebody says, I'm going to buy all copies of this card in hopes that I can raise the price and make it, you know, make money on all these copies I've bought for cheap. I don't think that's good. I don't think that's sustainable, trying to run the pump and dump there. But it could be something that's happening as more and more random cards seem to spike.
I just don't think that happens as often as people who like to run around talking about, oh, robber barons like to think it's happening. I've even seen typographical errors where a site misses a decimal point and, you know, their one copy of that card is, you know, $17.50 when the card's really $1.75. That's been a force in throwing the prices off. I don't necessarily like people trying to manipulate the market and play it like an unregulated stock market. I just don't think that's happening as often as people like to think it is.
I would agree with that. So I guess as a player, you know, let's talk about what can you do if you're, you know, the typical Magic player who does not have infinite money to spend or infinite cards. What can you do to know which spikes are real and which spikes are maybe just driven by hype and are going to die down later?
Well, the first thing I do is I will take to Twitter and I will poll the player base because they may see something I don't. So I'll say, guys, is there any good reason why Shallow Grave has gone from $3 to $20 in the past 24 hours? Now, that was a card that I'd noticed was getting some play in Caleb Durward's new Reanimator deck, but I still don't think that accounts for the entirety of the spike. So that seems a little bit artificial to me. And the player base that I talked to seemed to bear that out. They're like, well, it's getting a little play in one deck, but it's not Modern legal. And so Modern is really where you want the instant speed Reanimator spells. So that's probably has little to do with it. So after I did that, something I've started doing lately is checking buy lists. Now, something like Karn, the Karn the Planeswalker, that was maybe like a $10, $12 card after rotation. That's about 30 now. If you look at the buy list price, that's about $22 on a buy list. So that says to me that dealers really want to get this card in. And not only that, they're willing to pay $22 on it because they think it'll still be 30 two or three weeks from now. They don't think that's a temporary, you know, price spike. If you look at a card like Shallow Grave, that's an $86 playset on eBay. The highest buy list price on that's like $4 and every other site's buying it for like $1.50. So if you have some site that you can go to that aggregates buy lists, I like QS's Trader Tools, but there are other sites that do that. If you want to use that to look at a bunch of buy lists at once and see if they're going up, if they're not, that says to me that the dealers don't care enough about this card to try to get it in stock, so they probably think it's artificial, and it could be one or two people buying all the copies as opposed to something they think their retail base is going to want to pick up from them.
Yeah, I agree. And kind of my two rules that I try to live by when it comes to speculating are this. First one is always, you know, to sell into the hype. So, like, if I have shallow graves and it hits $20, I'm selling them. I'm not going to wait around and see if it hits 25. If it's gone up 700% already, I'm going to lock that in. And you compare it recently to something like Gyre Sage, which before the Pro Tour 2 weeks ago, kind of had seen a lot of hype and moved up from $1.50 to $4.50. You know, at that point, it had a little bit of a showing in the top eight of the Pro Tour. And you could, you know, you could, if you got in at $1.50, you could get out for $3 or so and make some money on them. Okay. So if I have Gyro Sages there, I'm selling. I'm not going to wait around and see, oh, well, maybe it'll go to $6. So I think that's kind of the first rule, is that when you can make money, do it. Don't try to hold out for everything you can, which leads into my second rule, which is, you know, save the last 10% for someone else. If someone else wants to buy, for instance, like I got a bunch of Hell Riders cheap before that card spiked, and when it spiked to 10, I sold all mine. If somebody else comes down the line and buys all of my Hell Riders at $10 because they think they're going to go to $13 like they're at now, well, you know, more power to them. They can make that last 10-15% because I've already doubled up on the card by investing early rather than getting on the bandwagon late. And that's, you just have to keep an eye out for stuff, and you have to, you know, when the hype comes along, if it's not right away, you're probably too late. And that's the safest way to approach speculating.
I agree.
Yep. There's no sense crying over spilled milk. I bought Thundermile Hellkites at $10. I sold them at 20, and I wasn't really that upset when it hit 25, 30, whatever. And I doubled up, and that was good enough for me. If you hold out for that maybe eventual 30, you run the risk of it hitting 10 again, and you having to sell for what you paid, or even less. So it's the most difficult thing about this. It's easier to know when to pick a card up than it is to know when to sell. So if you're making a profit that you can live with, I absolutely find selling, even if it spikes the second time.
Yeah, that's like me with Liliana the Veil. That was a pick of the week last week that I had that I said to sell it. It was $35 on Moto, and it went up, and now it's at like 38, almost reaching 40, and it probably will do well because Jun looks like it will be better positioned against the deck, the Fast Boros deck or the Naya deck. So, I mean, situations like that, you're going to make bad calls, or not the best calls, but still getting out when the time is high and when it's high up there is a good thing to do, because you do lock in whatever you can get out of it, get your profits, and, you know, it's not bad to get out high, and if it goes a little higher, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
take it for what it is.
It's a risk-to-reward ratio. What was that, Ryan?
I said, I don't think that makes it a bad call at all. I think that just means that, like they were saying, you're not fighting for that last 10%. I would have rather sold out at 35, because who knows, next week it could have been 25 too, just as easily as it could have been 40.
And if you look at something like, you know, Wall Street and say, you know, like we hear, oh, I made 100% on this card already. If I hold out, maybe I'll make 125% on it. If you went to somebody on Wall Street and said, hey, in 2 weeks I can make 100% on this, what should I do? They're going to tell you to sell it.
Take,
you know,
all of your money, yeah. Buy right. All of the copies you can, and sell them when you hit 100% profit. Are you crazy, is what they would say.
I mean, what we're able to do percentage-wise is unheard of in something like that. So I find people, you know, really getting scared of holding out. You know, they don't want to miss a little bit. They don't want to miss something. Like, play it safe, because there are a lot of easy calls that you don't have to get burned on, even if you don't make, you know, as much as physically as possible.
And not making an extra $3 on Liliana the Veil seems like a pretty low upside for potentially eating a big one on holding a lot of copies of that if it went back to 20.
Right. All right. So let's move into kind of one of the other segments we do every week here, kind of for fun, also imparting some financial knowledge, hopefully, is what's it worth? What we do here is we each pick a card and we try to stump the other co-hosts on what it is worth. So, you know, this one, it's fun for us. And two, a lot of times we highlight cards that maybe you guys at home don't actually know are worth money. So that's, you know, I think there's a lot of value to this. So you guys ready to move into this?
I am. I get to go first this week because otherwise Jason will steal mine inevitably.
Okay. So there are two rules of this game. Number one is, if I go before Ryan, I'm going to try to steal the card that he was going to say without us discussing it first. I just guess and snake the card out from under him.
Oh, I do it to you, too.
Oh, he does it to me. The second rule is that the price guide we will be using is the website coolstuffinc.com.
Okay. My card for this week is Leyline of Sanctity.
Ooh.
Easy.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Corbin, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
I mean, if I'm within a dollar or two, I'll be happy. I'm going to say $14.
Say 10.
I think it's 16.
Okay. It is actually $14.
Yeah.
Not sure when I missed this one, but like last I knew this was like $6. So
this was, this
happens. You don't listen to Corbin, 'cause he called this card about a month ago.
Oh, see, like I knew he had talked about the card, but I didn't realize it had spiked that heavily.
Yeah.
My modern stuff has just been sitting in a box waiting for a PTQ. So, I mean, I'm not sad about this. I have like 8 of them. So,
yeah, it seems fine, I went through my binder the other day, found a Japanese one that I remember getting extremely cheap, you know, 2-3 months ago when the card was $4. It's just this. We were talking about weird cards that spike. This is one of them, because sure, it sees some sideboard play. You know, maybe, I don't know if it needs saw enough sideboard play to triple its price.
Well, the demand is clearly there.
All right, who wants to go next?
Well, I was going to say Leyline of Sanctity, and Ryan took it. Uh-huh. So, no, I'm just kidding. Here's a Legends card for you guys, because I know how much you like Legends cards.
This is an
EDH general some people like. The card's name is Tetsuo Umezawa.
He has a jitte. I've heard of it, right?
Yes, but he's not holding a jitte in the picture. He's holding a bow and arrow, and it looks like...
I have no idea what this is for.
I can tell you what he does, if that will help.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's a red, a black, and a blue, which puts him in Grixis colors as an EDH general. You can pay a red, 2 black, a blue, and tap him. Destroy target tapped creature or target blocking creature.
Sweet.
And Tetsuo may not be the target of an enchant creature spell, which is, as you know, extra relevant.
That's the best ability ever.
Right.
So you can't untap him with free jewelry.
You're not putting invisibility on this Tetsuo Umezawa. So he is a 3-3 for 3, which...
It's from Legends.
He's from Legends.
He's a 3-3 for 3, which means he's got to be good. I mean, he's a playable general, and he's in Grixis colors. I'm going to guess he's around $20.
I was going to say $29.99.
I'm just going to go straight $19.99.
Marcel, what is he on Modo? 22 cents?
I don't even think he's on Modo.
guess what he is on paper, Marcel?
$25.
Okay, Ryan was actually the closest. You all went over. He is $18.99 on Cool Stuff, Inc.
Well, at least we were all in the ballpark, I guess.
You all went over.
Sure. $7 okay over. Rules.
If you're only 150% over, you're in the ballpark. Okay, preps.
I was off by $80 last week on a card, so don't feel too bad, guys.
All right, I've got one. Talk about highlighting some, you know, some off-the-beaten-path cards. Jason did that going old school. I'll take it a little more recently and say Creekwood Liege, the green-black Liege from Eventide.
Oh, don't do that.
See, I do know this because this is a card I like to target.
Yep.
I mean, I like to. I just don't remember what they're worth. I mean, I don't think they're the highest of the Lieges. Could be wrong. Last I knew, they were 6, so obviously you're saying
the
something.
White one's super expensive, so.
Yeah, I mean, green-white ones gets played.
Oh, true. Yeah, Whitleaf is the most expensive. No, you're right. Okay. So, like, I assume they're all kind of jumping. I don't know. I'm going to say $10. Like, I have no clue.
That's an odd guess, but okay.
I'll say 8, yeah.
He's 12. I know because this is a card I target in people's binders.
Yep, he is. Because everybody thinks he's... Yeah, and see, what's crazy is back when I started getting into trading, maybe like a year after Eventide came out, and a year and a half, you know, as I was getting ready to rotate, I was all about the Lieges because they were $4 to $5. And I was like, hey, this is sweet. You find these cards, they're, you know, $4 to $5, and nobody knows about it. They've all gone crazy since then, and Woolleaf Liege is like 15 or higher now at this point.
Cool Stuff has Woolleaf for 14.
Yeah, right. So... you know, they're popular casually. They're all powerful. Some of them get played competitively. So, I mean, it's one of those really good cycles. They're
even the cheapest of them is $5, and people, you know, when I buy bulk rares, people will ship me, like, the green-blue one in bulk all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, people, they're a lord, and basically one of the rules for finding cards that aren't bulk or going to be worth more than you expect is things that are lords and that they pump creature types or they pump colors, and all the Lieges do that.
Plus, they have some really neat effects for playing spells in those colors, too.
Right.
Yep. How about you, Marcel? What do you got for us?
So I'm going to pull a card out. It's going to be a promo card.
Oh, no.
Popular card called Mutavolt.
Ooh, which promo?
The full art, extended art.
Full art one.
Oh, I don't like talking about this card because every time I see this card, it reminds me of the fact that they only did Two-Headed Giant Champs 1 year. So Aaron the Godslayer and I top forward, actually, because it was four teams. Two-Headed Giant Champs, we got a foil full art promo Groundbreaker that's worth like $10 now. And just the UK got the Mutavaults.
And this makes me so sad because if you guys don't know, haven't listened to the cast before, you'll learn before too long. I love Merfolk, and I'm trying to finish boiling out my Legacy Merfolk deck, and I'm getting pretty close. And I have foil Mutavaults, but I don't have the full art foils because they cost $600-$700, right?
Yeah, some ridiculous.
I don't think they're $600 on cool stuff, but
I'm gonna guess they're $1 billion because those things can't be found. I don't even know that cool stuff will have any, and I know of like. Yeah. Two playsets of them.
I held a playset in my hand one time. It was a highlight of my life.
A playset? Wow. Yep. Yeah, I doubt Cool Stuff has one. If they do, it's probably about 600.
Yeah, I have a standing order for four of them that will never be found. So
there are like probably 100 of them on Earth or something.
All right, Marcel. So how close are we with our guesses of 600-700?
Well, you guys are pretty good because it's about 550 out of stock and cool stock. So yeah, they don't have it, and if they had it, they'll probably charge as much as they can get for it.
This card's
$1 billion. Who has to have these right now? I'm gonna go look.
I would love to have these. I'll tell you that much.
Well, I'm sure everybody would, but
it's rare when you have foil Mutavaults and you're sad because your deck isn't foiled out yet. But I want the full art ones. One day I'll have them.
Shoot, regular Mutavaults are expensive though. But
there's one
almost
on
$40.
eBay for $500.
Wow, I think you snapped by that
for $500.
Sure.
probably
on Cool Stuff's buy list for $500 if they're gonna sell for $550.
That's true. You could probably sell it for $500. Just to have it in stock looks good. There's a lot of people who did altered art Mutavaults.
Anyways, all right. So do we have anything else left to say here in our first cast here for Gathering Magic? Besides, obviously, we're very excited to be here.
Promo Vengevine.
Oh yeah, Vengevine. Yep.
Promo Vengevine. It'll put some downward pressure on the original's price.
Yeah. Is that all you can say, Corbin? They printed a god-awful, ugly Vengevine that everybody in the cast likes but me, and all Corbin can say is, it's going to put some downward pressure on the price of the original.
I think it looks... I like the new art. I think it's pretty cool.
Yes, it is.
I think
you
it's...
You can get these at...
it doesn't look like a Vengevine. It
World
looks
Magic
like...
Qualifiers is where you get these.
It's not like the new Targamorph. That just looks like crap.
I've never heard of this card, Targamorph.
Targamorph, oh my god.
Is he a Power Ranger?
He's the green
Watch
Power Ranger.
Bitches grow!
Marcel made a mistake and we made fun of him for it. That's what we do here.
Tune in next week, you'll catch more of this.
So where can everyone find you guys in the realm of social media?
In a hobbit hole hiding from society. No, actually, I can be found on Twitter under Cripple Command, or apparently now I have another account, which I am unaware of the password to, Shamble Shark, and,
That's the Troll Ryan account.
Apparently. You can also find me on Gathering Magic Weekly. My articles are published on Friday, so, like, Friday, technically at 12 a.m., so Thursday night for those of you that stay up late. And, other than that, That's pretty much it for me.
My Gathering Magic series, Who to Follow, goes up Wednesday night / Thursday morning. You can also find me on the free side of QuietSpeculation.com. I am reachable on Twitter at Jason E. Alt, and I'm also on the Facebook.
Yeah, and I write on the insider side of Quiet Speculation. I also write for a couple other websites every couple weeks doing some additional finance-related writing. And I'm on Twitter at chostler88, as well as, Facebook and Reddit and all the social media you can shake a stick at.
Yeah, I'm just on Twitter. That's pretty much the only place where you're going to find me. It's MarcelMTG. And here on Brainstorm Brewery, I do have a Twitch account, which will be Brewski Bistro. And I do have some time away from work. gate crashes here. I got a few brews going. Talking about Master Biomancer and Lingering Souls. I got a pretty interesting deck that goes with that. Well, it uses some common cards like Thrag Tusk and Restoration Angel along with it, so it's not super, you know, cutting edge, but it's definitely a fun deck to play. So you'll see stuff like that. I got some wacky brews and trying to make them competitive. So if you want to catch me, I'll be on there. But check back next week, because this is Brainstorm Brewery. We'll be here on Gathering Magic. And thank you guys for listening.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Sayonara. Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.